So today we have one of these very challenging parables from our Lord, and I can't focus on the whole thing because I want to consider one aspect of the parable particularly, and then I'm going to tie it into this month, which is 40 Days for Life, and I want to invite you to consider signing a petition before you leave St. Peter's this morning. So the title of my homily today is this: Inspired by a Formidable Hope. I'm not going to tell you who this man is quite yet. I'm going to keep you guessing or keep you baited for a couple of minutes. But this man will be at the very center of today's homily. So we heard a parable today. A parable about a king who is incredibly generous. And he wants to have a wedding banquet for his son. Now imagine if you got an invitation from King Charles III to some sort of banquet, would you just ignore it? Well, you might. Would you just spur it? Well, you might. Because it happened here in this gospel passage. But what Jesus is wanting to have us see is that this king is a king of such extravagance. This king is one where he wants to invite everyone to celebrate the wonderful banquet of grace. And as we hear this story read, we're told that, well, people had other things to do. Rather than being at the banquet, I'd rather go to my farm. Rather than being at the banquet, I want to go to the Chinook Mall. Rather than being at the banquet, one excuse after another, after another, after another. But there is one man who comes to the banquet, and as he gets in, the king shows up and realizes this guy is not wearing the wedding garment. Now, what is the wedding garment? In the ancient world, the wedding garment was, well, kind of like a party favor. You might get at a modern wedding or at a birthday party. It might be a scarf, it might be a shawl that everyone who was at the banquet would wear to recognize that we are part of this celebration together. And the bride and the groom would be dressed differently to mark them apart from all of those who were wearing the wedding garment. So there's this one guy who either has slipped in without having been invited, or he has been invited, but he says, I'm at this wedding on my own terms. I'm going to dress my way. I'm going to do my thing. After all, life is all about me, isn't it? Well, the king is none too pleased with this, and we're told that he instructs his servants to bind the man and throw him into the outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. Of course, what Jesus is representing here allegorically is hell. And that's part of what this is about. We can live our lives in such a way that we think we're at the wedding party, but we're there on our own terms. And we're not actually clothed with the garment of grace. And at the end, we could find ourselves ultimately and forever excluded from the wedding banquet of grace. It is important when hearing this story to know when Jesus told it. It is Tuesday of Holy Week. And the people to whom he is primarily addressing this parable are the chief priests and the scribes, who in 48 hours will arrest him, collude against him, and crucify him 3 days hence. Do you know how it's been said that it's really important to listen to the last words of a really wise person? These are some of Jesus Christ's last words before his crucifixion. It's one of his last parables. And so it would be prudent for us to think seriously about some of the last words of the second person of the Blessed and Divine Trinity, the Son of God. So what is Jesus wanting to tell us in this parable? If we try to follow Jesus without his teaching, without the teaching of the church, we are trying to get into the wedding banquet by refusing to put on the garment. But we then think, well, Christianity, it's sort of like a self-help buffet. I'll choose here what I want, and I'll reject that which I do not want. It's all about my personal preference, and that is so much how modern people live our lives. But that's not what Jesus is teaching. And that's why they crucified him, because he was willing to say the hard things that the religious leaders did not want to hear. And part of what he was saying is that life is about God's revelation. And to respond to it, it requires humility, obedience, and trust. And when we discover this more and more, when we discover what it is to live this way, with St. Paul, we can say, yes, I want to follow in the way of Jesus Christ, and I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And we could say that this verse is kind of like the wedding garment. It's that being empowered by the Holy Spirit so that we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. How is this possible? Because those who wear the wedding garment of grace capture something that is on display in our first reading from Isaiah. And Isaiah 25 is the Old Testament parallel to today's gospel parable. And there's this beautiful language of how the mountain of the Lord, the place where the Lord reigns, is a place where all the nations will come. Oh, and it's going to be grade A Alberta beef. It's going to be the finest wine, strained clear. And on this mountain, death will be abolished forever. What Isaiah actually sees is what is fulfilled in Revelation 19, verses 6, 7, and 8. It's called the marriage supper of the Lamb. And here's the thing. We need to get it in this life. We need to understand this is what it is to live as a follower of Jesus Christ. What it is to be clothed in the wedding garment. So let me return to this man. This is Dr. Jerome Lejeune. He was a French geneticist who in 1958 identified the genetic defect that causes Down syndrome. He was also considered one of the most highly regarded geneticists of the 20th century, and he was a devout Roman Catholic. He upheld the dignity of human life. For Dr. Lejeune, the legalization of abortion was not only morally objectionable, it also constituted an assault against the expression and a contempt for science. Let me explain what I mean. He said that genetics demonstrated that at the very moment the ovum is fertilized by the sperm, all of the genetic information that defines the resulting individual is already inscribed in its entirety in the first cell. No new genetic information enters into an egg at any stage after initial fertilization. Thus, this foremost scientist, this devout Roman Catholic, concluded, genetic science postulates that a human being could not be a human being if not first conceived as a human being. Now, this is one of the foremost geneticists of the 20th century saying this. And see how it corresponds to the teaching of the Roman Catholic Church. What I'm putting up here is paragraph 2270 of the Catechism, which reads, human life must be respected and protected absolutely from the moment of conception. From the first moment of his existence, a human being must be recognized as having the rights of a person, among which is the inviolable right of every innocent being to life. And Dr. Lejeune would say that can not only be supported theologically, it can be supported scientifically. In 1969, Dr. Lejeune received the William Allen Award. This award recognized substantial and far-reaching scientific contributions to human genetics and had been established in 1961. In 1969, as part of his speech when he received this reward, as also a medical doctor, he said the following. For millennia, medicine has striven to fight for life and health against disease and death. Any reversal of the order of these terms of reference would entirely change medicine itself. He wrote these words in 1969. Interestingly, his speech was not well received. And after he left that day, he said to his wife, "Today, I lost my Nobel Prize for medicine," because they wouldn't award it to him because of what he was willing to say. Now, in 1994, Pope St. John Paul II named Dr. Lejeune the first president of the Pontifical Academy for Life. But just 33 days later, on April 2, 1994, he died at the age of 67. On January 21, 2021, Pope Francis recognized Dr. Lejeune for his heroic virtue, and this is the first stage towards the discernment if someone should be considered for beatification, which comes before canonization. One writer who reflected on Dr. Lejeune's work commented in the following way. In view of the moral relativism and intellectual skepticism so prevalent in Western culture of his and our time, Lejeune's cause seemed doomed from the start. But as his daughter Clara, this is his daughter, said of him, "My father had a realism that was inspired by a formidable hope." Wow. He was realistic. He understood the kind of world he lived in. But did that dissuade him? Did that discourage him? Did that defeat him? No. He had the formidable hope of which St. Paul spoke in today's reading from Philippians. "I know what it is to have little. I know what it is to have plenty. In any and all circumstances, I've learned the secret of being well fed, of going hungry, of having plenty, of being in need. I can indeed do all things through him who strengthens me." Dr. Jerome Lejeune embodied this in his life. Now, with this in mind, I want to inspire us to have this same realism that is inspired by a formidable hope. There is a petition in the narthex that's being circulated in churches across Canada this month. We are realistic. We know that this petition will not make any difference to what the Parliament of Canada will do. But what this is doing is it's expressing a concern that Canada is one of only a few countries that has no abortion law at all. You can have an abortion right up to 9 months. So back in December of 2019, the Dart and Moreau Blue poll polled 1,515 people from across country, from different educational age groups, gender, and regions. And they asked this question: should abortion be legal or illegal during the 3 last months of pregnancy? 30% of Canadians from across the country in this poll said yes. 70% said no. Now, I grant you, this is only one poll, but it is representative of something, and this poll's results were released in the National Post. Again, we don't hear this in the media, that there is a concern that abortion up to 9 months is a concern. And I know most abortions happen in the first trimester. But there's a principle here also at play that I would invite us to consider seriously entertaining this week. The other thing for you to know, and this was reported by the Globe and Mail, there are more crisis pregnancy centers in Canada than there are abortion clinics. So in conclusion, may I therefore invite you to join your voice to other Christians by signing the petition that is in the narthex. As I said, it's going to be available for the next 3 Sundays, and you might need time to prayerfully consider this. Or you might feel, I can't sign this petition, and I respect your point of view. But I am a priest of the Roman Catholic Church, and as such, I need to convey to you the 2,000-year teaching of Catholicism, inspired in our modern time by this advocate and pioneer of the pro-life movement. May we indeed be inspired by Dr. Jérôme Lejeune, and may his formidable hope allow those of us who are committed to the pro-life movement to say, yes, I understand exactly what St. Paul meant when he said, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.